This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Danny's back in our D.C. studios near Nationals Park. I am in Las Vegas. Darris and Ryan at the controls. We are G&D, and you are listening to The Fan. Appreciate you guys making the show part of your day in Richmond, all over D.C., coast to coast with the Odyssey app. Let's go around the NFL really quickly, Danny, with some news, some notes, some thoughts, and then we will get into our confidence points picks against the spread here. We'll get Darris to update the standings, and we'll all put our money where our mouth is. Our proverbial money, I should say.
So to speak, yes, of course.
Our reputations. Taysom Hill is going to try to play through a finger injury. He was wearing a splint last night. He threw four interceptions. I thought he was abysmal, and I thought Troy Aikman was really, really nice a couple times where he was like, you'd like him to fit this ball over top of this linebacker here, but that's hard because he's a good linebacker. It's like every quarterback does that every single week. Please just say that he threw a terrible pass.
Yeah, you'd like him to make a good NFL pass there, but that's hard to do.
There was a time where he got sacked by Micah Parsons, where it's very clear. Like I've seen this a million times, just like you have. Parsons is the free man off the edge. He's now the quarterback's responsibility. You're not allowed to get sacked by him. You have to burn the ball into the ground or get rid of it or throw it away. It's a bootleg anyway, so you can throw it out of bounds. And he just chose not to. He just took a sack for like a loss of 11 yards. And Troy Aikman's like, I know you think that he's not supposed to take that sack there, but, man, when it's Micah Parsons, it's really hard. And it's like, well, yeah, it's hard. It's the NFL. That was a terrible sack that he just took. But anyway, I don't know how much he was hurt by the injury. I'm sure it was substantial, and it didn't help.
He's not a great thrower anyway before he's got a broken middle finger or whatever the hell that hammer finger thing is. But
some games that are bad get to the point where they're, like, cringeworthy, and last night was cringeworthy. It was like one of those, like, grit your teeth and kind of like, oh, man, this is uncomfortable. I feel bad for this guy. That's what it was in the second half last night.
Yeah, throwing the ball. I mean, he had that third quarter where I think he ran for almost 80 yards.
They threw picks on three straight drives, and then he had a fourth drive begin with a dropped interception. It would have been four picks and, like, six throws or something.
And they found something there, and then the Cowboys, you know, kind of took that away, and that was all she wrote, man. They couldn't really move the football. It was a bad sight to see, I would say.
Bruce Arians says he wants the NFL to investigate all teams for fake vaccine cards, not just his team. Antonio Brown's chef came out. Remember, he owed his chef money. And so instead of paying his chef like $10,000 or something he allegedly owed him, his chef and him were at odds. So the chef then said, oh, yeah, well, he's got a fake vaccine card. And it turns out that the chef was right, it sounds like. The league, according to Albert Breer, looked at DeSean Jackson's vaccination card, and like two other players on his team, the card said that he got his vaccine at this random place in some random town, like at 90 minutes away from Tampa. That's like a rural place where there's no reason he would ever be. And two of the other players also had the same location, and they're like, well, this is weird. And so their investigation ended up returning the result that the information that was provided was misleading, I guess is what they said, which actually means they just had fake vaccination cards. Now, according to Brown's agent, he has since actually been vaccinated. My thing has never been to care whether or not a guy's vaccinated, but in the same way when Aaron Rodgers lied, and while it's a very different situation, Rodgers skirted the protocols by being misleading, DeSean Jackson actually straight up lied to the league.
Submitted a forged document, so to speak.
Aaron Rodgers didn't do that. Aaron Rodgers told the league what was going on and then kind of lied to the public because he didn't want to get chastised. Antonio Brown quite literally gave the Bucs and the NFL a fake document to say that he had done something he hadn't. He's been suspended 3 games for it.
And now, by the way, just for the record, I do think Aaron Rodgers, you know, I don't know what the CBA says they could do, but I wish he was suspended more than someone who didn't wear their socks the right way or punished.
Just got fined a few $1,000s.
Yeah, which I think just kind of stinks. But I think sort of letter of the law, that's all they could sort of do. So I don't think that's total justice there, just for the record. But for Antonio Brown, I read the story, actually, Andrew Beaton, who fans might remember. That's the guy from the Wall Street Journal. That's the guy that's written these sort of, I wouldn't say from Dan Snyder's perspective, but Dan Snyder friendly, I would say, kind of stories. He had the story on this thing, and you touched on it. The NFL had these documents. A bunch of guys have gotten suspended or were under investigation because their documents would have like misspellings or like a date that didn't make sense or something kind of wonky. You know, it's like an amateur hour driver's license. Well, these were perfect forgeries, except they were from this completely out of the way place, 90 miles or 90 minutes away from Tampa Bay, at the same time, the same date, the same everything. These three guys that you know were kind of raised some red flags ended up finding out that they weren't authentic documents.
Yeah, they're fake. They lied about it. And they're all saying, well, not really, but they all took the punishment and haven't tried to fight the league on this. They're just saying, yeah, we'll sit out the 3 games. So Arians was asked about this today. What are you going to do? What does this mean? He says nothing's been decided. Here's what they're going to do. They're going to welcome Antonio Brown back with open arms when he's available to play again, just like they did the last time they could sign him when he was dealing with all kinds of legal issues and problems because he's a good football player. And so he'll have more lives in this league than a cat does. But I am very surprised. I did not expect that he would break the rules or get suspended. And I never would have thought that Antonio Brown would create a distraction for the Bucs. And I wouldn't have guessed that he would have ended up causing his teammates and the staff headaches. Like, that's not the kind of guy he is. That's just not who Antonio Brown as a man is. That's not what he's about. So bad luck. I mean, good, you know, bad things sometimes will happen to good people. And it's just, it's tough. I'm very, very surprised is what I would say.
I'm going to quote Anchorman and say, I don't believe you.
Giants have ruled out Daniel Jones for Sunday. I believe it'll be the Mike Glennon show for the New York Giants as they're getting 6.5 points against the Miami Dolphins. Have you seen the list of players who have missed games and how many games they've missed from the Giants offense this season?
I haven't specifically, but I bet you it's a gong show.
Dude, it's crazy. And this is every year. Remember when we were doing this in D.C. where we're like, the training staff, and it got a lot better last year. It's actually, frankly, kind of reverted to being really bad again this year. But for the Giants this season, after ruling out Daniel Jones, Barkley out 4 games, Galladay's missed 3 games, Shepard's been out 5 games, Tony's been out 2 games, Slayton's been out 3 games, Ingram's been out 2 games, Andrew Thomas has been out 5 games or 4 games. Now, not all of them at the same time, but it's just constant rearranging of deck chairs on this ship. Like, there's been no continuity. And I personally do think Jason Garrett did a terrible job. But that also is a factor here. And we're trying to figure out, like, Daniel Jones probably isn't that good, it doesn't look like. But I don't know how you would know that definitively based on what they've had. Like, they readily admitted, everyone readily admitted, they don't have enough weapons to help him right now. So they went and got weapons. Well, they've had no game, really, where their whole offense was together. So now Mike Glennon will get thrown to the Wolves this week.
I know. Well, Mike Glennon's just a second-year quarterback. So if he plays well, right, he's had less than 32 starts. If he plays well, then he could be the quarterback of the future, Danny said sarcastically. Anyway, yeah, it just whatever the plan up there has been hasn't worked. And I don't know how good the plans were at all the time, but the Giants are just an injury-riddled mess once again.
All right, before I throw to the open for our against-the-spread confidence points picks here in 20 seconds, we just got this out of practice because the time difference. So you guys are after 5 o'clock back east where Danny's broadcasting. Out here in Las Vegas where I am, it is 2:10. They're on the practice field or just finished. And Darren Waller's been listed as doubtful with his knee injury. Doubtful anymore today basically means that guy's not going.
All right.
So I would say get ready for the Foster Moreau show at tight end. The one game Waller missed, he had 6 catches for 60 yards. After Waller left, he got 4 targets in 3 quarters, caught 1 pass for 3 yards this past week. But that is a massive benefit for Washington. And we'll get the latest on Josh Jacobs, their running back, who's been missing some practice time as well. He's the next best player on offense. Obviously, DeSean Jackson's been missing some time this week. Their deep threat in Las Vegas as well. It is time to try to figure out how we see the games this weekend and who's going to try to catch Ryan in the standings. Let's give you some confidence points picks. Danielson, let's do it. Darris, update the standings, please, sir.
Well, the standings are sad to look at on my end, but we will start from first place. Ryan continues to lead the pack with 116 points in first place.
There you go.
He's got
very
a very confident face.
The guy that loves Jared Goff and the Lions so much somehow is leading confidence points.
It is unbelievable. In second place, Grant follows up Ryan with 103 points. In third place, Danny bounced back from his early season rut. He's now in third place with 98 points. And at the back of the pack, yours truly, Darris, is in fourth place with 85 points and looking like he's going to be the intern for a day.
I don't think you're going to be intern for a day. You just need to get on a heater.
I have very little confidence right now.
Well, I hope you have some confidence because it's
you're
time to give
confidence
out
points. Yes,
some confidence points picks. So, Ryan, you are the front runner, my friend.
Thank
First
you.
Of all, anything you'd like to say to the people as the leader? We're all just looking up to you, sir.
I don't know. People are looking up to me yet. You know, your boy's still only 21, but I've been hot, and I feel like the NFL is like my home run for me for betting. So,
When you said you're only 21, aren't you 22 now?
Oh, actually, yes, I am 22. I'm
that's
Juan
the guy that's
Soto.
Leading, by the way, by a
yes,
lot.
Thank
right.
you.
Also, Danny, did he not understand what I was saying when I said we're all looking up to you?
Yeah.
My point is you're leading in confidence points.
Like, I know.
Well, I don't know if I'm a role model. I am only 21.
Good point.
We're
good
looking
point.
Up in the standings,
just,
buddy.
Just take the credit, dude. I'm just saying that we're all chasing you, bro.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That made my heart feel warm.
There we
so
go.
Here, I'll start it off with my five-point play. I had the 49ers -3.5 going against the Seahawks this week. We just saw the Seahawks play on Monday night. They're going to be having to travel back to the West Coast to play the Niners. They stink. They completely stink. So I got the Niners.
I like that play a lot. You're going to see it on my board here in a moment. Five-point play for me, the Indianapolis Colts. Perhaps it's because I'm watching Hard Knocks. I think this team's really good. They got a quality win a couple weeks ago where they pounded the Bills. They played Tampa Bay super tough. Should have beat them this past week. Now they get the Texans. They're -10. It's a big spread. But I think they're going to blow the Texans out. Got a good defense. They're number one in takeaways. They're going to take the ball away from Houston, and they'll run all over them. Give me the Colts to win by double digits. They will beat the Texans and cover that number.
Two things I want to say. Number one, I hate the games this week. None of them spoke to me. This all feels weird. I don't like it. My five-point play is the same as Ryan's five-point play. Here's the thing. San Francisco doesn't beat Seattle. They haven't beaten them in like a million years. And yet somehow they're my five-point play. The only reason they are is because I just saw that Seattle team and they looked so terrible to me that I would basically pick anybody in the NFL against them this week. That's why they're my fiver.
All right, my five-point play is going to be Tampa Bay -10.5 over the Falcons. The last time these two teams played, it was quite the drubbing, 48-25 back in, what was that, week three, I believe it was. So, yeah, I can see, especially on the turf inside of Mercedes-Benz Dome, I can see Tampa Bay continuing to roll over Atlanta. That'll be my five-point play.
All right, my four-point play, I have the WFT +1.5 going against
wow.
Vegas. Yes, I have a four-point.
You feel good about it.
I feel amazing. I was contemplating as a five-point play, but I have a little nugget here for you. The Raiders are 0-5 this year when Carr throws for under 300 yards, and the Washington football team hasn't had a passer throw for over 300 since Pat Mahomes did this week six in 2021. So I got the Washington football team +1.5.
Good nugget. Four-point play for your boy. The San Francisco 49ers turned themselves around. They played a huge game last week against the Vikings. Winner, really good shape to make the playoffs. Loser, going to be scratching and clawing the rest of the way. And they did at home what everyone thought they would. Vikings didn't have a single member of their starting defensive line from week one. They ran all over them in the second half, 200 yards rushing. They're basically saying to Jimmy Garoppolo, hey, we might not throw it that much, and when we do, please don't kill us. Now, Deebo Samuel's out. Could be a very, very different offense. I don't love the fact that Deebo Samuel's hurt, but they only got to win by four, and Seattle is tumultuous, as you guys have talked about. That felt to me like a line that was about half of what it should be. If it was -6, I still might take it for San Francisco and Seattle.
You already touched on this one as your fiver. It's my four-er. The Colts -10. Houston is pretty much done. I think the Colts will get physical football downhill and smack them around.
Same thing for me. My four-point play is Colts minus 10. Last time these two teams played, the Texans got rolled 31-3. Why not happen again?
Yeah, my three-point play is Indianapolis minus 10 as well.
Kiss I think, of death. For
exactly.
All
yeah, seriously.
By the way, we all are on the same two games so far, including the same side of that one.
Exactly.
So that is there going to be a lot of green or a lot of red at the top of the board this week?
The Texans are going to win by Christmas. Landslide now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
3-point play. The New England Patriots are catching 2.5 against the Buffalo Bills in the game of the week. Darius Jones, because every single week I pick the Monday Night Football game, I always like having a chance to pick up a couple points on you guys when it's all set and done on Sunday. I just like the matchup. I think I'm picking New England on the money line to win this game. They are rolling. They're running the ball. They're playing defense. It's kind of the finesse throw every down game that Buffalo brings to the table against the ground-and-pound defensive style of New England, which, if you're able to do it, is a little bit safer and more consistent. I like the Patriots to win outright, but if you're giving me 2.5, I'll take them.
Same rationale for me, my friend. Again, I don't like any of the games this week, and that line puzzled me a little bit. I don't think anybody in the league, I don't mean the AFC, in the league is playing better than New England right now. I like them to win it outright, but I'll take those 2.5 points gladly.
My three-point play, I don't know why I'm doing this, but for some reason I believe that Pittsburgh can bounce back this week, and they're not going to let Baltimore come in and bully them the way that they let the Bengals bully them last week. I think Pittsburgh can cover this plus 4.5 over the Ravens this weekend.
All right, my two-point play, I have Philadelphia going against the Jets, and I have Philly minus 7 in that game. And I just think Philly is a really good team, and I think it's an easy win for them to get over a touchdown.
And are you worried about Jalen Hurts' status?
I mean, here's the thing. Zach Wilson is not a good QB right now, so I just see them steamrolling them.
Okay. I think he's going to play, by the way. Sirianni said he's debatable come game time. Hurts made it seem like he let the cat out of the bag and said he's going. But that is at least a question mark for right now. I'm with Darius. Steelers plus 4.5. I know it backfired on us here last week, but generally you catch points with Mike Tomlin, you take those points and you say thank you, and you ask where to go cash your winnings. I just think that Ravens win, the Steelers are completely out in the conversation of the division and may not make the playoffs. It would make more sense to me if this thing tightens back up and if the Steelers are in the mix in late December. That would just feel more like how I expect things to go. So if they do lose, it'll be close, but I could see them winning it. I'll go Steelers plus 4.5.
One of the few games that I think folks don't have in common. I actually got the Ravens here minus 4.5. Steelers are beat up all to hell. They basically are playing Ryan, Darius, me, and a couple other guys off the street at defensive line. I think it bodes well for Baltimore to do Baltimore things. These teams always play close, and it's always ugly and gross and not that much fun, but I do think the Ravens finally are able to take advantage here and win by a touchdown.
Yeah, I'm not getting much push in the pocket for that one. My four-point play is Miami minus 6.5. I originally was going to go Giants with the plus 6.5, but once I heard that Daniel Jones is out, I'm not feeling too good. Miami's been playing really good. They're on, I believe, a four-game win streak at this point.
They're hot right now.
They are hot right now. Tua's been playing really confident. Let's go ahead with Miami minus 6.5 over the Giants.
You know, Danny just convinced me. I'm going to switch my number one pick, my one-point pick. I'm going to go Ravens minus 4.5. The Steelers are too banged up, and I just see them pulling it off and winning by a touchdown or more.
One-pointer. I'm going against Darius head-to-head here in that Giants-Dolphins game. I'm backing Mike Glennon, the pride of Westfield High School.
Here we go.
Give me New York plus 6.5 based on the fact that everything's been coming up Miami lately. I don't think they're good enough to win. What would it be, 5 in a row now or something like that? And if they do, I think the Giants can muck this game up. You saw how they played defensively against Philly. You know, they're able to keep quarterbacks in the pocket and keep them from making big plays with their feet. Tua has played much better of late. There's no doubt about that. But I still have my concerns and issues with him. So why not? The Giants, if it was a 1 or 2 point game, I would roll with the Dolphins. 6.5 is a big number for a bad team to try to cover. Two bad teams play. Give me 7 points. I'll take the worst of the two bad teams.
I wanted to take something in that game, but I thought about who I trusted more, and I threw up a little bit. So I just didn't pick it. Give me the Eagles minus 7 for my one-pointer. My voice can't go up anymore. I don't know, man. I had to pick a fifth game, so I chose that one.
Those are the Darius, you got one more.
So
my sincerest of apologies.
Oh, man, pulled the trigger on me. My last one, I'm making the Ryan Clary leap of faith. I'm going Detroit plus 7.5.
Someone's got to
go. I hate betting games.
You're taking that, the Tigers? The Lions, I mean?
I hate betting games that have the Vikings involved, but this would be such a Vikings way to lose this week. Or at least allow them to cover the spread this week.
So I pretty much have an anti-Vikings rule at this point.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they're catching points or laying points. You just, what are they? You just never know. So you're saying Lions 7.5.
We're going for it. We're going
for it. All right. Let's do this thing. Those are our confidence points picks. Darius needs a big week. Get back in the hunt. Ryan is setting the pace right now. Remember, Vinny Bonsignor, Las Vegas Review Journal, is joining us at 6 o'clock. He's going to scout the opponent with us. Next, here's a guy you got to be worried about this weekend. Max Crosby with two X's. How are they going to slow him down? Is he going to wreck this game? And we've also got some thoughts on the announcement today from Maryland that Mark Turgeon is out as head coach. You are listening to The Fan. Danny, I thought the people next to me on the flight were slightly inconsiderate last night on my connection, sitting next to a couple, and they were just like showing each other their phones and, you know, laughing a ton and whatever, and occasionally kissing and whatever. I'm like, this is a little bit weird for me, but damn, whatever, live your life. I had it pretty good, apparently, because I saw this story today on a Delta flight. It was the company I was flying with, had a great experience with yesterday. A woman recently, unidentified female, flew from Syracuse, New York to Atlanta, Georgia. It's not like some crazy places going out of the country or something. Just a flight you could have been on, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
She was caught breastfeeding her cat on the plane.
Okay.
I saw this today and I thought, Delta, I flew on that. Those are two towns I've been to. Breastfeeding a cat. Apparently it was one of those like hairless cats, and it was wrapped up like a baby in one of those satchels or like scarves where they're like, you know, just pressed against you. And she was breastfeeding a cat, and they kept asking her to stop, and she wouldn't do it.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Is that a show?
We don't have the proper tools as a society to deal with it.
Because for people that don't know, Danny, if I am on a plane and I say something, just say something to the person, like, let's say in the row, it's me in the middle with Danny on the outside, and there's just a person in the window. If I'm like, hey, how you doing, man? Where are you headed? That's uncomfortable for Danny.
I want to put my head into a bag when you do that. And now you do it because you know it makes me uncomfortable.
Well, I do it because I love talking to people, but it doesn't hurt that you're also going to be mad about it.
That's
right?
Your bonus. You know what you're doing. Yeah.
What would you do if that was happening next to you on a plane?
I actually don't have an answer to that, and I'm not trying to be difficult. I don't know. I mean, there are two ropes pulling. It's a tug of war, Squid Game style, okay? Tug of war number one is no one should talk to anybody. Nobody should ever address another human being. Let's just get through this flight, and we can all kind of go about our lives and hurry to the rental car because it's a limited amount of resources, and we should walk briskly through airports. That's like my life philosophy that governs everything I do correctly. The other side is somebody needs to say something. So, like,
see something, say something.
This must not be allowed to continue. So, I don't have the authority to do it. I'm just a man. I'm just sitting here on the plane, just trying to steer forward, trying to not have the stewardess come by and correct my tray table.
Well, a baby's crying, like, that ruins your day. That's an inconvenience. Yeah. That's annoying.
But
that's unacceptable.
But that's not a completely unacceptable activity. You know what I mean? Like, the baby is allowed on the plane.
No, but my point is, for you, it's a thing, it's a scene, it's a whole ordeal. Imagine the lady with the cat.
Yeah, I don't scold parents with their screaming kids. Like, even though there should be kid-free flights, and by the way, first airline to do that gets my business forever.
But would you say anything to her?
I think you have to. I think the intimate and powerful desire I have to never talk to anyone in public like that, because again, we should just strive to never do that. That would be overwhelmed by how absurd and awful this was.
So I see stories like this from time to time, and 95% of the time I don't mention them. But what I found amazing this time, number one, It's the airline I was on yesterday. Like, it could have been us. I mean, honestly,
this might be us.
It's not like this weird airline I've never heard of going from this country to this country, which even though it's on the planet and the world is pretty small, sounds like, oh, that could never happen to me, or that's not real. Like, this happened on a flight kind of like the one I was on last night. This lady with this cat. I just think it's the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
By the way, those cats are awful. They stink. Cats in general are pretty terrible. Then you add in this hairless monster that is not kind or loving or anything else. It's just this.
You're caught up on
thing.
The cat. How about the action? How about the activity?
Oh, I haven't even gotten there yet. First of all, that cat shouldn't be on the plane. Let's just period point blank that. That cat shouldn't be there.
The cat's allowed to be on the plane. They have these rules. It's supposed to be in its little crate, its little mesh crate, which they kept telling her, you got to put it back in the mesh crate. And she was like, I'm allowed to, you know, breastfeed my child or whatever she was saying.
Right. So it should be in a crate in storage or not on the plane at all or any of the other things that are normal options that are not having it breastfeed from your bosom.
Right.
So before we even get to the act of lunacy and irresponsibility and, oh my God, jail this person, that cat stinks. And the fact that we're now like, yeah, that's fine. Okay. Bizarre creature that stinks is just here on this plane now. That in and of itself is absurd.
These people, man, they exist.
Then we get to what this person is doing. I mean, good heavens.
They're all around us.
Good heavens.
We're all just trying to figure this thing out together, and they're right here with us. Max Crosby, defensive end with the Raiders, has been on the field for over 600 snaps this season. He has rushed the passer on 390 of them. He's got the NFL's highest number of pressures. 71 times he's pressured a quarterback. He's got 49 hurries. Now, if you look at quarterback hits, he's also number one on that list. The only list he's not number one on is sacks. But anything that involves with not sacking but affecting passes, pressuring, hurrying, hitting, he's number one in all three. And decidedly so. Like, he has 12 more pressures than Myles Garrett. There's only a handful of guys in the league with 50. He's got 71. In terms of quarterback hurries, he's got 8 more than Shaquille Barrett and 11 more than anybody else. Kenny Clark, Joey Bosa, Jeffrey Simmons having a great year with the Titans. Quarterback hits, 15 is one more than Andrew Van Ginkle. Don't know much about him. He plays for the Dolphins. And Nick Bosa from the San Francisco 49ers. It's one of the best defensive players Washington's played this year. A candidate for Defensive Player of the Year. On pace to break the Pro Football Focus record for pressures in a season. I wonder how much attention they're going to pay him and how much doubling of him they're going
to
do.
You're going to have to do some, but you can't only do that, right? Because Yannick Ngakoue opposite him can win one-on-one in his
own
way.
That's true.
This is, again, people are going to look at the stat and say, oh, he's only got 5 sacks. Why are you guys hyping this dude up? I'm telling you, I almost called him Oakland. Watch Vegas play and watch this dude. He is always causing problems, whether it's knocking down a pass, changing the arm angle of the quarterback. He beats tackles like they're those dummies that J.J. Watt used to smack around on Hard Knocks, you know, like where he's working on his hand placement by himself on the football field. He is so relentless and so good. That's the guy that's kind of got me jittery about this matchup the most.
I think Cornelius Lucas has largely done a really good job. And I don't just mean this year. I think last year he was terrific. He's not as big a drop-off from Sam Cosmi as maybe people would expect or project. I think if you have an elite tackle, they have a hard time in this matchup. You have to help him. Your point against Ngakoue is correct, but you pay Leno a handful of million of dollars. I think him against Ngakoue, you got to give him more one-on-ones than you're going to give Crosby. And when Crosby moves, because he does move around some, and it's Leno, then I would say the same thing. Then at that point, Lucas has to try to handle Yannick Ngakoue, and this is how he's getting those sacks. The problem we're talking about that is presented by this defensive front is how you get here with the Raiders. But the interior is actually where they're super banged up, where they're on center number 4, where they don't have Wes Schweitzer, who's played center and guard, where Larson's now questionable, and Eric Flowers is not 100%. I think he's going to play. He's listed as questionable. It sounds like he'll go. I mean, Ron Rivera said he felt good about that. But can he get through the game? Like, how many times this year have we heard a guy was questionable, then he played and he didn't finish the game. If you lose him already without Schweitzer, already without Roulier, already without Larson potentially, I shudder to think about the matchup just trying to get the ball out or hold up in pass pro against this defensive front for the Raiders.
I said this on a little bit earlier, but the basically two things that I'm worried about in this game are big plays. And big play DeSean Jackson on offense, and big play Max Crosby and Ngakoue on
defense. He's only really made the one for the Raiders. That doesn't help you feel somewhat better?
No. He had one that should have been against Dallas.
Yeah, and then he did a DeSean Jackson thing where he fumbled.
But most of the other times, or not most of the other times, oftentimes he doesn't do that, and it's against a former team. I mean, it just the thought of him and then the miscommunication in the secondary, where I thought you were going to pass off to that guy. Oh, I thought, next thing you know, it's a long game. That's what I'm majorly worried about. I think if they keep the Raiders in front in terms of making them, you know, check it down and sort of be consistent, rally to the football, and they'll limit what the Raiders can do offensively. I'm not as worried about that. And then on the other side, I think if Washington could kind of attack on the ground, stay ahead of the sticks, not get into those 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8s where Max Crosby can come wreak havoc, I think you can handle this game. But it's just getting into a bad situation or two. That's what I'm worried about. So the advantage is what you just touched on with the interior of that defensive line. I actually like it, even with their fourth center, even maybe without Ereck Flowers, I like their chance to pound Gibson between the tackles a little bit here. I hate majoring that because I feel like he ends up hurt and slowed down by the end of the year, but this may be a game where the game plan calls for it to thump a little bit and force those defensive ends to be accountable.
Let's open up the Gambit DC listener lines for you guys next at 800-636-1067. Here's the question. We'll get a couple calls in on this. What do you feel confident about as far as this matchup goes on Sunday? Washington looking for a fourth straight win. If they get a victory, they'll be in really good shape as it pertains to the wild card hunt. And then what do you feel worried about? So confident about is one thing. Worried about what makes you nervous? We're talking about one of our anxieties going into this game with Max Crosby in that defensive front. Danny's a little worried about DeSean Jackson popping the top off offensively. 800-636-1067, we'll get to that. Plus, as soon as we return, I just saw a name linked to Maryland as a coaching candidate that is kind of stunning and borderline LOL funny. I think people will be really surprised. I'll tell you who that is next. Grant and Danny on the Fan. At the top of the hour at 6 o'clock, Vinny Bonsignor of the Las Vegas Review-Journal to help us scout the opponent. We'll find out all about the Raiders. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Multitasking today on a Football Friday presented by Alarm.com, keeping you connected to what matters most. The huge story in town, as far as timeliness goes, it's not the game Sunday. It's Mark Turgeon's out at Maryland.
Yeah.
Turge has been there for a decade, Danny, and this was year 11. So there were a bunch of names being thrown around, but one of the names now in a couple different places that I have seen pop up that is one, it's just a big enough name that you have to react. Rick Pitino.
I saw a couple people tweeting that.
Pitino. Talk about a guy who's got lives like a cat. I mean, he just keeps on finding ways to resurface. He'll leave one place, sometimes amid turmoil or scrutiny or being in trouble or whatever. But he's a hell of a basketball coach. He is at Iona.
That's right.
Right now. They were in the tourney last year. They've actually given some good teams fits this season. I mean, he's got them on the come. But I saw that name and I kind of laughed. I was like, are you kidding me? That's a name that people are linking? Oof. Now, I think you go young, you go up and coming. You go next star coach or assistant somewhere where they're doing big things right now. No thank you on Rick Pitino. Other names I've seen include John Beilein, who was at Michigan for a long time. Andy Enfield, who a lot of people will bring up. But how about when you saw Pitino for the first time today, what did you think about that?
I was intrigued. I mean, it's been long enough. You would maybe where sort of the stink of what happened at Louisville. Everything from his personal life, or, you know, and the pay for play, kind of the scandals that were there. He kind of got kicked down to the minor league, so to speak, playing, no disrespect to Iona, but some disrespect, I suppose. Has them playing well, kind of, you know, you serve your time and down there on the farm, and you know, what a great reentry point to rebuild the sleeping giant.
He probably didn't go to Iona, in other words, to stay at Iona forever, right?
That's
kind of
idea,
a reclamation project.
You rebuild your rep, and there you go. I don't know. Honestly, that it's intriguing. Who knows if he'd be interested or not, honestly. I mean, who knows if he would look at it and go, yeah, there's too much baggage there. I don't want to be part of that negative stuff. And who knows if they pay the freight, honestly. Talking about Maryland, having just handed Turge, I think, a check for $5 million to go do something else. So I don't know. It's I will tell you that's intriguing, though.
That's a big part of it, Jeff Ehrman told us, is what are they going to be willing to pay? We keep asking the question, is the program at a point, and just nationally, are they at a spot where they can actually attract an elite coaching candidate? But the only way they do that is if they overpay a little bit. And he didn't seem like he was all that confident that they'd be willing to do that. Let's go to Luis in Hernan, wants to talk about Washington and Vegas on Sunday out here at Allegiant Stadium. I'm sitting in Vegas now. Luis, what's going on? How are you, buddy?
I'm okay, thanks.
You're on the radio. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I predict that Washington is going to win the game on Sunday afternoon by a score of 24-20. And I really hope they can win, and the players must stay healthy.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you.
I could hear us in the background. The show sounded pretty good, Grant.
Everything sounded good.
Yeah.
Look, health, he's right, though. I mean, you got to come out of this game. If we're really ranking the remaining six games of importance like we did earlier, mm-hmm. and we said the two Dallas games and the two Philly games are the top four and this is six. Now, where you and I disagreed was I happen to believe this is still a massive got-to-have-it type game. I just think when you've got a losing record in December and you're trying to make the playoffs, that's the case. But we could parse that up another time. The big thing is win or lose, great if you win, you can't lose anybody else as far as injuries go.
Yeah, especially key spots. Yeah,
you got to be right for this stretch run. The Giants would be the fifth on the important list and then Vegas sixth. How would you divvy up the Eagles and the Cowboys for if we're ranking importance?
The two Eagles games to me are the most important because you're directly competing with them for those postseason spots.
So you've punted on the division after last night.
Yes, I pretty much have given the division to Dallas. Now, that may be a mistake. They may collapse. But to me, mathematically, that's just too hard with the games that Dallas has.
If you sweep them, it looks a lot less hard.
It's very different. If you sweep them, they still have a two-game lead on you, though, pretty much, if you do that.
How about two straight weeks for Washington? They play the Raiders Sunday, off of Monday Night Football, mind you, 6 days later, when the Raiders played the previous Thursday, so like a 10-day window. And then this coming week, now they don't play Monday, but they are coming back cross-country from a Sunday game to play a Cowboys team that will have not played since Thursday. Two straight weeks, they'll have at least two, three days fewer to prepare to rest than their opponent. Not ideal.
No,
and then
not
the
at
following
all.
Week, they play the Eagles off a bye, don't they? I think the Eagles play
the Jets.
The Eagles
have a late bye. You may be right about that.
I think the Jets this weekend, then a bye, then Washington.
So here's my ranking super quick. The two Eagles games and the Giants game are 1-2, and the Giants game is 3. Mostly because I'm thinking of winnability, and I'm thinking of got-to-have-it kind of deal. You need one against Dallas at some point, but you just can't drop a game to the Giants. You just can't. And that nothing else matters if that sort of
so you have the Dallas games after the Giants game?
Yeah, in terms of their fate for this year, yeah.
Wow. I'm with you on Philly, because I've never thought they're going to win the division, but after last night, I think it's not worth talking about right now unless something happens and Dallas collapses. But I would go Dallas 3-4. Again, head-to-head teams that are in the mix, that kind of thing. And then the Giants 5 and Vegas 6. Let's find out about the Raiders. We've talked a lot about Crosby. Is DeSean Jackson going to play? How healthy is Josh Jacobs out of the backfield? What's their offense going to look like without Darren Waller? Lots of questions for Vinny Bonsignore. We will scout the opponent next live on Grant and Danny. With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Much appreciate everybody listening on this Football Friday. We're getting closer to kickoff of college championship games on Saturday, and more importantly, a pivotal game in Vegas for the football team on Sunday. It is a Football Friday, and we are presented by Alarm.com, keeping you connected to what matters most. Each and every week on this show, we scout the opponent, where we bring somebody on from the visiting market to break the team they cover down. So let's get to it right now. It is time to scout the opponent. A guy whose content on the Raiders I've followed and enjoyed for some time, Vincent Bonsignor, is with us. Now, Vincent, am I saying your last name correctly? I only see it in print.
You got it, man. Very good. You nailed it. So kudos to you. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate it. Vegas Nation reporter, Review Journal, covers the Raiders, and he also hosts Huddle on Raider Nation Radio in the studio that, in fact, is out here in Vegas. All right, let's just start with... You take the temperature of this team. They'd lost three in a row. They got the big win on Thanksgiving against Dallas. Who and what are the Raiders right now?
Well, they're much like their colleagues around the NFL. If they play clean, efficient football, they could beat anybody on their schedule. But when they get away from that and they, you know, commit careless mistakes and shoot themselves in the foot, as they were during the three-game losing streak, they've got a tough time beating whoever they're playing against. So, trying to define who exactly they are has been a week-to-week proposition. But I think, you know, they showed some real positive signs on Thursday against the Cowboys, specifically how they were able to get Deshaun Jackson activated, engaged, kind of as that replacement for Henry Ruggs. If you look at that three-game losing streak, there was definitely a lack of explosiveness compared to when Henry was in the lineup. And they desperately needed somebody that could replicate what he was bringing to the table. And Deshaun absolutely was able to do that against the Cowboys. Now we'll see if they're going to be able to continue to build on that.
Vinny, what I don't know is what defense is going to show up. I saw that Raiders defense be pretty good in some spots, take advantage of some, you know, mediocre pedestrian offenses. You'll see one here this week, by the way. I also saw them, you know, with that losing streak you mentioned, Chiefs, Bengals, and even the Cowboys didn't have much trouble moving the football against them. I'm kind of not sure what defense is going to show up. I guess that kind of fits with the theme, huh?
Yeah, and you know when the offense has been efficient and staying on the field, this Raiders defense has played pretty well. And even in the losses to the Bengals and the Kansas City Chiefs, those were close games. Thanks really to the defense until the fourth quarter when they just ran out of gas. You know, they had 41 or 42 offensive plays against the Bengals. That's just not going to get it done. Against the Cowboys, it was 87 plays, so that makes a huge difference for that defense. And you saw in overtime that defense was pretty fresh, able to get a three and out to start overtime and get the ball back to the offense, and they kicked the game-winning field goal. So it's a complementary proposition for them. If the offense is doing its thing and helping the defense stay fresh, then this defense is pretty good. And compared to where they were last year, this defense really, truly is night and day. And it kind of starts up front with Unique Ngakoue and Max Crosby and the pressure that they're getting on the quarterback. That was not the case last year. So in a lot of ways, this defense is much better, and it certainly gives the Raiders a chance on a week-to-week basis.
All right, three-parter here, which is basically means it's a bad question, but I'll ask it anyway. Number one, your thoughts on Derek Carr's season so far. Number two, what should we expect from him without his number one weapon, Darren Waller, this week? And then number three, is there any chance he'll be available this offseason in a trade for Washington?
Oh, you saved the best for last. Number one, you know, again, he's been playing at a really high level. When he wasn't at his best during that three-game losing streak, you know, you don't want to put it all on the loss of Henry Ruggs, but you can't overestimate how important Ruggs was becoming to this offense and how he changed how defenses defended them, opened things up for Darren Waller and Hunter Renfro, loosened things up in the run game. So it was exactly what the Raiders had hoped he would be when they drafted him 2 years ago. So when he left, the whole offense, including Derek, struggled to get back on track. But you saw again on Thursday with Deshaun now filling that role where Derek's taking chances downfield again, you know, spreading the ball around. So that was the good Derek Carr, and that's been predominantly the case with the Raiders. He's been really good this year, save for that three-game losing streak. And I'll add leadership to the equation as well. The Raiders have been through some pretty traumatic experiences this last month and a half or so, and Derek is one of the leaders that have helped them navigate those choppy waters. As far as his availability at the end of the season, I think right now everything is on the table, and it's kind of all predicated on how this season ends up. You know, if they're able to hang on here and push their way to the playoffs, I think he solidifies his future as a long-term quarterback here. I think Mike Mayock, maybe even the head coach, interim coach Rich Bisaccia, are on much better footing. But if they falter down the stretch, it's not going to shock me at all if the Raiders look to go in a number of different directions. And that might even mean their quarterback. You know, this will be his eighth year this year, or this is his eighth year this year. They made the playoffs all of one time. That's not all his fault, because in a lot of ways the Raiders have done him wrong more than he's done the Raiders wrong. But after a while, it just becomes, okay, is this ever really going to work? And maybe it's just time to go in a different direction on all levels.
Vinny Bonsignor.
If you ask me in about 6 weeks, I'll have a better answer on that.
Sorry to jump on you there. Vinny Bonsignor covers the Raiders for a Vegas Nation reporter at the Review Journal. So the guy that terrifies me, there too, DeSean Jackson, who you touched on, just because mostly, like, he burns me, whether that's when he plays for Washington and he fails to get in the end zone and does something weird, or against Washington. So I'm terrified of him. But the other guy that I'm afraid of is Max Crosby. This dude is a superstar. People aren't talking enough about how good this guy is. I think because the sack totals aren't what they are for guys like Myles Garrett and company. I think this dude is an absolute demon. Just talk about him, what you've seen from him, how they implement him and where they put him, line him up, just kind of get him loose.
Well, by the way, as far as DeSean, we talked to him yesterday. He kind of had a little bit of gleam in his eye about playing Washington. I think we all understand why. So he even admitted, you know, the teams that have parted ways with him, he usually has something saved up for them. So we'll see if that translates or transfers to Allegiant Stadium on Sunday. As far as Max Crosby, no question. You know, his second year wasn't as good as his rookie year, and I think he understood that. And there was a lot of things that he did in the offseason, including some personal decisions that he made in terms of, you know, sobriety and all that type of stuff. And the work ethic that he put in, and also Unique Ngakoue coming on board. They're kind of like two Pied Pipers and joined at the hip. And it's just resulted in a player that has all the boxes this year and has played at an incredibly high level. You mentioned the sack totals. That kind of comes and goes. But when it comes to getting pressure on the quarterback, he and Unique are as good as it gets on the defensive line. And I got to give Unique a lot of credit, because all the way back in minicamp, you know, he said that he and Max Crosby were going to be the best pass rushing duo in the NFL. A lot of us kind of rolled our eyes a little bit, but he spoke it into existence, because that's exactly what those guys are.
Yeah, we had a couple of defensive ends say they were going to get the sacks record this year. Neither of them will be playing in this game, and I think they've combined for like 4.5 or something like that as a tandem, so it's gone the opposite way. So you're right. When you make that prediction, it doesn't come to fruition. What is your prediction for this game? What's your feel? And give me a script for if the Raiders won, they did what? If they lost, what happened?
Well, I mean, I think from a talent perspective, I just think the Raiders are the better team. And so there's no excuse for them. They should win this game. They've got, you know, the rest of the way, it's all AFC, whether it's in their division or the Colts and the Browns, two teams that figure to be in that playoff hunt as well. So they got to take care of business against the Washington football team, and really no excuses for them not to. But as far as if they win, they're going to play clean, efficient football. They're going to, hold on to the ball. They're going to get, 70-so plays out of their offense. They're not going to make careless mistakes and shoot themselves in the foot with penalties. And I think that that's the winning formula for the Raiders.
And are they good enough on offense to do that without Waller, you think?
Yeah, he sat out a game against the Philadelphia Eagles earlier, and it was honestly one of their better performances of the year. So they have some experience not playing with him. They played the second half, all the second half with the cut him. So, had DeSean not done what he did against the Cowboys, I might be a little bit more concerned in that regard. But I think that they're okay. And they've got a really good backup, too. Foster Moreau, he might not be the biggest name in the NFL, but here in Las Vegas and with the Raiders, there's a lot of confidence in him. And when he's been pressed into duty or a little bit more duty, especially in the pass game, he's typically responded.
Where are they vulnerable, Vinny?
I think they're vulnerable along the offensive line. It hasn't quite come together as they had hoped. I think their run game is still a work in progress. And I think there's opportunities defensively. You know, you could run on them. They haven't been able to stop the run game consistently this year, although they probably had their best effort against a pretty good run team in the Cowboys on Thursday. So I think tight end linebackers, and so that's one to watch without question. They don't do a very good job of keeping up with good tight ends. And you know that the definitely is okay in that regard. So that would be a matchup that I would keep an eye on, too.
Could be good news for Logan Thomas in his second game back from injury. Vinny, we really appreciate the insight. It's great information. Thank you.
Thanks, Vinny.
All right, guys. Enjoy the game on Sunday.
Thank you. We will. You too. Vinny Bonsignore, Las Vegas Review Journal on Grant and Danny, helping us to scout the opponent. Right now, we've got a pair of Caps tickets that could be yours. You got to be the eighth caller in honor of Alex Ovechkin at 800-636-1067. If you call in, you're the eighth caller. You'll win those tickets. They're playing the Ducks at Cap One Arena Monday, December 6th at 7 p.m. this coming Monday night. Alex Ovechkin and the Capitals are home, and they are available to be seen all season long at Cap One Arena. Single game tickets, group tickets, partial plans, all on sale. For more info on how to purchase tickets, go to washcaps.com/tickets. Of course, you can listen to their game on The Fan. If you don't win those tickets right now, make sure you're listening in 10 minutes. I'll tell you another way you can win tickets before we get off the air here today. All right, Danny, we've talked a lot about the Raiders in Washington. What is your prediction for Sunday?
I think the Raiders win this game, Grant. I can't escape that my DeSean Jackson and Max Crosby. I've talked myself into a stupor over here just based on those couple of guys. But hearing Vinny's confidence that their offense will be able to do it, I think Vegas may be just a one possession better here than Washington. And kind of this charmed ride sort of slows down a little bit. I don't think it quells anything. I don't think it's over by any stretch of the imagination. They're going to be missing, talking about Washington, J.D. McKissick, an awful lot. They'll miss Landon Collins. I think that's a huge miss for them. Not having Wes Schweitzer as well is going to hurt. I'm not sure what Eric Flowers' status is going to be. I think this is a 23-20 kind of game. I think the Raiders do it. Just maybe one more big play on both offense and defense.
My original score was 23-20, and I, right before you said that, I crossed it out and lowered it. I've gone 20-17. I got Washington winning the game, though. And I think they win. My feel is, and Vinny knows more about the Raiders than I do, but I think not having Waller's going to make a bigger impact than people think. I mean, it sounded like he really feels good and is comforted by DeSean Jackson having 100 yards on three catches against the Cowboys. I mean, he missed time this week. He's not necessarily consistent. He could have a big game. I'm not saying that that's not the case. But if that's, he basically said that's the reason why he feels like not having Waller is okay. I don't know how much I trust DeSean Jackson. So give me Washington 20-17. I could see Carr tapping into some lesser used options, maybe not on the same page, miscommunication, interception here, you know, tip for a pick there, maybe a couple picks for this defense. They keep it low scoring and they win 20-17. I think that's going to be the formula. Some other NFL games of note this weekend. The Chargers are playing the Bengals. This one's important in the AFC. 6-5 LA at 7-4 Cincy. The Bengals destroyed Pittsburgh. They had to have it last week. They're in a great spot now. But now it's the Chargers this week in the you better win a big game against a team that has a similar record to you mode. If they lose, there's a good chance they could end up missing out on the playoffs. If they win, they'll be in a decent spot with five games to go.
Yeah, they've had a couple of hiccups here in terms of, I keep thinking they're going to get right and just sort of reel off a bunch of wins in a row. That just hasn't happened yet, GP. They're obviously super talented. And
the loss to the Broncos last week was not only surprising, but it was damaging. They lost by 15, and they almost blew their huge lead to the Steelers, remember, on Sunday Night Football a week before. Had they have lost that game, they'd probably have been screwed, and they'd come in with three straight losses. They lost to the Vikings. They barely beat Pittsburgh and held on amid a collapse. And then they lost by 15 to Denver.
Yeah, so coming out of the bye week, that loss to the Patriots now doesn't look so bad, because who's better than the Patriots right now this minute? So they beat Philadelphia, as you said, lost to Minnesota, but beat Pittsburgh. And I'm going, okay, here they go. They found it. Right now they're getting going. And they just laid a stinker on the road at Denver. But they've had some unbelievable games where they look great, going on the road and beat Kansas City in week three. They've had some games, again, recently where they went on the road and looked terrible. That loss to Denver is the most recent example. I have no idea who posts.
Another game that's important for both teams. There's a lot of games here where teams need to win. but they're not playing a team that is in the same boat. Is Minnesota and Detroit, Eagles and the Jets, you know, Colts and the Texans are examples. But I'm looking for games where it matters a lot for both teams. How about the Ravens and the Steelers?
Yeah.
This is your 425 window, Sunday afternoon. This game will be going on as Washington and the Raiders are playing, so maybe you'll need the two-screen setup if you want to watch it. But Baltimore is in Pittsburgh. The Steelers are 5-5-1. They have never been under 500 at the end of the year under Mike Tomlin. A loss here, and that stretch is in jeopardy of ending, but more importantly, they'd be in a real tough spot to try to make the playoffs. You win this game, though, you're still very much in the mix. You'd be 6-5-1. Baltimore would fall to 8-4. And you would still be in the conversation in the AFC North. I think Pittsburgh covers for sure. They're getting 4.5 points. I'm not convinced they win the game, but at home against the Ravens, this is as close to a must-win early in December as you're going to find.
I let recent things influence me too much. I'm a sports fan. It's what we do, right? But the Ravens, excuse me, not the Ravens, the Steelers, that tie against Detroit, I know they didn't have Ben Roethlisberger, but good gracious, everything about that operation was awful. They've got a bunch of injuries. Then against the Chargers, they couldn't stop anybody. And the Bengals just kicked the crap out of them last week. I'm probably overrating how bad I think the Steelers are right now this minute. But I can't help it. I just finished watching it and was just so bitterly disappointed in that performance in a game that I thought they'd really be up for, knowing that they needed to have it there within their own division. I'm probably overrating how bad it is at this point, so I do think Baltimore wins this game, but you're right, it's massive for both.
They've been great week to week at responding.
Yes, they have.
Sometimes it goes the other way for them, where they look awesome and then the next week they don't. Football Friday, Grant and Danny, presented by Alarm.com, keeping you connected to what matters most. Two more to sneak in here. Don't need to spend a lot of time on this one, but it is kind of intriguing. Denver's a surprise 6-5. Based on that win over the Chargers, remember they started 3-0, they completely fell off, looked like they were in a tailspin, and Vic Fangio could be out of a gig, and they were going to be picking in the top 7 or 8. Well, now they're back to 6-5, and they've got the 7-4 Chiefs. Now they're 10-point dogs. I don't think anybody expects them to win. If somehow they could, they would be 7-5, tied with the Chiefs at the top of the AFC West, pending the result for the Raiders. I guess there's a chance, I should say, that all four teams in the AFC West are 7-5 at the end of this weekend. I don't think Denver beats Kansas City, but they're not as far out as people think they are.
Denver's okay. I said that when Washington was about to play them. I said it earlier in the season. I know they lost some games.
Well, they were terrible then. That was the right time to catch them.
Yeah.
They were good early against awful teams. They've been pretty good lately, including a decent win last week against the Chargers. But when Washington caught them, remember that month, they were really stinking up the joint.
They were scuffling.
Although the Cowboys game kind of turned their season around.
They are a plus 32. They, believe it or not, they have the best point differential in the AFC West, better than the Raiders, who are in minus 36, for example.
That's stunning.
I'm not telling you the Broncos are good. They're okay. They're aggressively okay. And that might just be enough, honestly, in the weird sort of setup we have in these two conferences, where the top are going to finish with their 12, 13 wins like normal, and there's going to be a bunch of gross infighting for someone to win 8 or 9 games that's going to get in. Denver, with Detroit and the Raiders, Chargers, and Chiefs remaining, they got one of those sort of AFC West schedules to kind of finish things out as well. They could be around.
Biggest game of the weekend, probably the biggest game of the season to this point, and it'll end up maybe being in the top 5 when it's all said and done this regular season. 8-4 New England coming in on an absolute heater, winners of 6 in a row, taking on the Buffalo Bills, who are 7-4. They have, New England, taken over the top spot in the division based on having played one more game than Buffalo. The Bills felt like they were about to begin a run of supremacy. They were going to be the new England after winning the division last year. This was now their district to run. The Patriots run the ball. They play defense at levels that very few teams in the league can. They're fun to watch. They bully clubs. The Bills are a lot more finesse. They spread you out. They throw it. They let Josh Allen play hero ball. Two contrasting styles. The winner is going to be in the driver's seat to win the East.
So I think of the Colts as kind of a poor man's version of the Patriots right now. Physical, downhill, tough running team that plays decent defense. The Patriots are a better version of that at this moment. When those two teams matched up, the Colts and the Bills, the Colts kicked the snot out of them 41-15.
It's a great point.
It's not apples to apples. Obviously, it's different weeks. Each week is its own story. But in terms of stylistically, I don't trust the Bills right now. They've won 2 out of 4, so that's not the end of the world. But that weird game against Jacksonville, they beat up a terrible Saints team, and you know, they beat the Jets. I kind of almost count those as inter-squad scrimmages or, you know, spring games or something like that, beating some of those bad teams up. I don't trust them in a huge matchup against the Patriots. I like the Pats.
We'll get to what we learned today on Grant and Danny in 1 second, but I do want to run through the last four games for New England because it's been lopsided. They beat the Panthers 24-6. They pummeled the Browns 45-7. They shut out the Falcons 25-0, and then they destroyed the Titans 36-13. They're not just beating teams.
They're killing people.
They're eviscerating them. Bill Belichick, take a bow. I mean, this has been as good a coaching job as he's done.
Agreed.
All right, let's figure out what we learned today on Grant and Danny. Great way to end this Football Friday presented by Alarm.com, keeping you connected to what matters most. It is time to figure out what we learn thanks to our friends driven by your local Honda dealer. Race in and get yourself a deal from Honda. Their Dreams event is ongoing, the Honda Dream Garage event. Take advantage of the savings and see your local Honda dealer today.
The entire station, minus my friend Grant Paulson pretty much, is going to the Wizards game tonight. So appreciate all the folks here at 106.7 The Fan and folks at Monumental Sports invite us. So Darius is going, Ryan is going, my son is going, Vic is going. A whole bunch of us are going to be messing around in the suite, and hopefully we don't burn the place down.
Which son, Byron or Bill?
Bill.
Bill's going?
Yeah, Byron does not care at all.
Wow. Will Bill stay for the whole game, or are you rolling out at halftime?
It's a great question. I don't know. I don't know what his endurance level is going to be. I will tell you, he got his second vaccination shot this week, and he's been a little tired at night. Totally understandable.
All right. Well, I look forward to a full report on how much he enjoyed the game. What I learned today, Burger King is selling 37-cent burgers. They're selling Whoppers for 37 cents today and tomorrow to commemorate their 64th birthday. You got to sign up for a Perks account, like an app or something, I think.
Yep.
Which if you eat there anyway, you probably will have
should do
have
that already. Yeah.
But for the next 2 days, if you do that and you order via the app or whatever, you can get burgers from Burger King, not just any burgers, their famous Whopper, for 37 cents, Danny. They normally cost over $4.
That's a pretty good deal as far as deals go. That's like what my parents always used to talk about. This used to cost that. Well, now you can get it for that. I would go get that.
I told you at the end of the show I would tell you that there was another way for you to try to win some Caps tickets. So right now, callers number 9 and 10 at 800-636-1067. You are winning a pair of Caps tickets, courtesy of your pals, Grant and Danny, to go see them at Capital One Arena this coming Monday against the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. Gordon Bombay at the controls. Quack, 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 Mr. Ducksworth. See Ovi and the Caps all season long at Cap One Arena. Single game tickets, group tickets, partial plans all on sale. For more info on how to purchase tickets, go to washcaps.com/tickets. Listen to the team right here on The Fan each and every game. Danny, enjoy yourself tonight. That sounds like it'll be a blast.
It's going to be fun. Probably not as much fun as you're going to have in Vegas. Go handle your business, man. Win me some money in blackjack.
I will try to win you a buck or two. Chris Nockey, who better to host overtime tonight? Mark Turgeon out at Maryland. What's going to happen next for the Terps? He provides color commentary on their radio broadcasts. Nobody knows Maryland basketball better than our guy, Nockey. He's got overtime next, live right here on The Fan.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.